Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
We'll speak with Mandisa Thomas about Black Nonbelievers' 10th anniversary.
We'll hold to account the role of Christian nationalist members of Congress on January 6th.
Then talk with Carl Sagan's daughter, Sasha Sagan, about her new book on secular rituals.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. Civilians in Yemen's Hodeidah governorate face a growing threat from escalating clashes with shelling of residential areas endangering thousands. The warning from the UN's senior humanitarian official in the country, Elke Lutzma, follows an uptick in fighting since mid-January. In the last 3 months of 2020, 153 civilian casualties were reported in the Western Governorate, the highest number across the country. Women and children have been the principal victims of the violence, and scores of houses and farms have also been damaged in southern districts of the Governorate, Mr. Lutzma said in a statement. At least 700 people have been displaced to date, he added. At least 700 people have been displaced to date. The conflict continues to exert misery on millions of lives, said Mr. Lutzma, insisting that those fighting paid little or no regard for civilians or their efforts to work. An immediate end to hostilities is urgently needed to allow humanitarians to conduct needs assessments and provide crucial medical support to wounded civilians and material support to those who have been displaced and lost their livelihoods, the humanitarian official added. In a related development, the long-awaited inspection of a rusting oil tanker off the coast of Yemen has been postponed until early March, the United Nations has said. The news follows administrative delays involved in securing the necessary international shipping documentation for the mission, which has now been resolved, UN spokesperson Stefan Dujarric reportedly said on Wednesday. The 44-year-old Safer supertanker holds 1.1 million barrels of oil. Fears of an environmental catastrophe increased last May when the tanker sprang a leak. It was abandoned in 2015 off the coast of Hodeidah when its engine room flooded with seawater, leaving it under the nominal control of Houthi militants, formerly known as Ansar Allah, who are fighting the internationally recognized Yemeni government. Sticking to the new inspection timeline would depend upon the cooperation of the Houthis, Mr. Dujarric said. UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, has called for an end to expulsions and pushbacks of refugees and asylum seekers at Europe's land and sea borders, amid continuous reports that some European states are restricting access to asylum. UNHCR on Thursday called on governments to investigate and to end the illegal practice. Unnamed states return people after they have reached territory or territorial waters and use violence against them at borders, said UNHCR's Assistant High Commissioner for Protection, Gillian Triggs. Boats carrying refugees are being towed back, people are being rounded up after they land and then pushed back to sea, she said in a statement, alleging further that people's international protection needs were being ignored systematically. Those arriving by land were also being informally detained and then forcibly returned to neighbouring countries without any consideration of their international protection needs, the UNHCR official maintained. While countries have the legitimate right to manage their borders in accordance with international law, they must also respect human rights. Pushbacks are simply illegal, Ms. Triggs added. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and let the science speak. To quote the good doctor, Anthony Fauci, that is, mask up, sleaze up, science works.
And I'm Dan Barker. This is the January 28th, 2021 edition of Free Thought Radio. Again, Buzz Kemper is ably engineering the show from his studio by the Wisconsin State Capitol, Audio for the Arts. while Annie, Laurie, and I are hosting from our Safe at Home Audio for the Aparts studio in Madison, Wisconsin.
And I guess we'll be saying that for quite a while longer, according to what science is telling us. Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is the nation's largest association of freethinkers, atheists and agnostics, skeptics, whatever you like to call yourself, working diligently as a state church watchdog. Join us at FFRF.org. We hope you've been watching and seeing Ron Reagan all over the airwaves in the past 2 weeks, Samantha Bee's Full Frontal, Colbert, the first time CBS National has allowed us to run this ad, and also on The Daily Show on Comedy Central. Look for it next week, starting on Rachel Maddow on MSNBC.
And if you join the Freedom From Religion Foundation as a result of seeing that ad, welcome to the organization. If you're not religious, what does ritual mean in your life? Today, we're going to talk with Sasha Sagan. She's the daughter of Carl Sagan and Andrianne, about her new book, For Small Creatures Such as We, Rituals for Finding Meaning in Our Unlikely World. We've talked with her mother on this show a couple of times, and also recently on Free Thought Matters, our TV show. Andrianne produced the Cosmos TV series. She's written many books. Like her late husband, Carl Sagan, she's also a wonderful writer.
And so is their daughter, Sasha Sagan. She's continuing the tradition by writing a book about tradition. She'll be joining us on the second half of today's show. Before that, we'll talk with Mandisa Thomas, president and founder of Black Nonbelievers, who've just had their 10th anniversary, about the letter that she and the Freedom From Religion Foundation co-wrote and sent to House Majority Whip James Clyburn, objecting to his recent proposal for a national hymn.
Tomorrow is the birth date of the English composer Frederick Delius. He was born January 29th, 1862. Delius had no faith in God, his friend Eric Fenby said. Delius told Fenby, "The sooner you get rid of all this Christian humbug, the better. Don't believe all the Tommy rot the priests tell you. Learn and prove everything by your own experience."
And since we'll be talking about ritual, tradition, and the changing seasons on today's show, and after the troubling months ahead, we're going to look forward to a hopeful spring. During the breaks today, we'll hear the relaxing and soothing music called On Hearing the First Cuckoo in Spring by Delius.
And let's say happy 80th birthday to Robin Morgan, the feminist activist, author, and co-founder of the Women's Media Center, turns 80 tomorrow on January 29th.
And on the second segment, we'll talk about probably the most famous birthday boy of January 29th.
On our TV show, Free Thought Matters, this week, we're talking with Robert P. Jones. He's the founder and president of Public Religion Research Institute, about his book, White Too Long, The Legacy of White Supremacy in Christian America.
This topic is especially relevant in light of the connection between Christian nationalism and white supremacy that we saw during the insurrection on January 6th. The history of evangelical Christianity and Jones's current research clearly show that white Christians are intolerant of racial equality. We asked Jones if the church has been good for African Americans.
When we think about the word white supremacy in Christianity, or we hear about church and racial justice, most of the time what people think about are African-American churches that served as hubs of organizing for the civil rights movement and were places of, you know, taking courageous stands, working for the equality of African-Americans in the country. But very few people think, when you hear civil rights and church, very few people think of the massive resistance that white Christian churches put up to the civil rights movement.
You can catch that important and timely interview with Robert P. Jones this Sunday on broadcast TV in Chicago, Denver, Houston, L.A., Madison, Wisconsin, Minneapolis, New York City, Phoenix, Portland, Oregon, Sacramento, Seattle, Washington, D.C., and now also in San Francisco. For the stations and the times, check our website at FFRF.org.
It's under the news link, or you can watch Free Thought Matters right now on FFRF's Free Thought Matters YouTube channel, including our past interviews such as with Andrianne.
One of our previous favorite guest on Free Thought Matters was U.S. Representative Jamie Raskin of Maryland, who is one of the co-founders of the Congressional Free Thought Caucus, with Representative Jared Huffman of California, with whom we spoke on this show last week.
On Monday, you probably caught the very dramatic moment, January 25th, when Representative Raskin, as the lead impeachment manager, read the article of impeachment against Donald Trump when it was delivered to the U.S. Senate.
In all this, President Trump gravely endangered the security of the United States and its institutions of government. He threatened the integrity of the democratic system, interfered with the peaceful transition of power, and imperiled a coequal branch of government. He thereby betrayed his trust as president to the manifest injury of the people of the United States. Wherefore, Donald John Trump, by such conduct, has demonstrated that he will remain a threat to national security, democracy, and the Constitution if allowed to remain in office, and has acted in a manner grossly incompatible with self-governance and the rule of law. Donald John Trump thus warrants impeachment and trial, removal from office, and disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States.
So I think probably you all saw that remark by Jamie Raskin, who lost his son on New Year's Eve to suicide, who made this very poignant statement when they said, "How can you be the leader here on the impeachment?" He said, "I lost my son. I don't want to lose our democracy."
So we're all now breathing a breath of fresh air. You can see one of our recent press releases about President Biden's early executive orders, the Muslim ban, the climate change, the COVID pandemic, but especially more recently, the reversal of the global gag rule. So we're looking forward to more humanistic-oriented executive orders from the current administration.
And there was good decision out of the First Circuit Court of Appeals on Monday, ruling that the city of Boston has the absolute right to reject flying a Christian flag at City Hall. This is a Liberty Council case where they were trying to force the city to put up a Christian flag. And so good decision. They're unfortunately going to appeal it. I don't think it will go very far.
And next week, we're going to talk with one of our attorneys about our organization's call, asking the Wisconsin Department of Justice to investigate Catholic church abuse. So stay tuned for that.
And so we have put out a press release just today, I think a very important press release, saying things that nobody else has been saying, such as shame on the Christian nationalist disruptors inside Congress. We've been focusing on the Christian nationalists, the neo-Nazis, the racists, the anti-government militia who attacked the U.S. Capitol in our democracy on January 6th. But we think it's also important to call to account the Christian nationalist views of most of the 147, I would call them disruptors, inside Congress who sided with those insurrectionists and voted later that night to deny the will of the voters. And a lot of people do the math. You may not have realized that more than a quarter of the members of Congress who were taking shelter for their lives while a seditious mob rampaged through the heart of our democracy ended up agreeing with those insurrectionists by voting to deny the lawfully won presidency to Joe Biden. And Dan, what do we know about these members?
What do they have in common?
Well, and there are 8 senators. Besides all being Republican and almost all white and mostly male, they have in common their religious identity. About half of the 138 House members who objected to the Electoral College count were evangelical Christians, but 98% of them overall, the 147, including the Senate, are Christian. And they're disproportionately represented in Congress, in fact, because 65% of our population today identifies as Christian. But 88% of the members of Congress are Christian, but 98% of those who voted against certification identify as Christian. And more than that, we went through their votes and their pronouncements to show that they have in common Christian supremacist, Christian nationalist views. And Christian nationalism, to define it very basically, is that they believe we're a Christian nation, or should be.
And that we have a lord, a king, a master, rather than a democracy.
And they're seeking to impose their religious views on others to privilege Christianity. And, of course, there's more to it than that. It really is tied to white supremacy.
So we can read some of their views on our press release?
Well, yeah. And first I want to say that most of them are stringently anti-abortion and anti-LGBTQ. You can just assume that. They're pretty much dyed-in-the-wool arch-conservatives, and they also have high ratings from other ultra-conservative groups. But they do tend to trumpet their Christian nationalist beliefs. They often list their church membership on their official bios, more than is typical. And just to give some examples, we do have, I thought, an actuality, don't we?
Well, you want Holly from Missouri? What? He was one of those who was actually cheering on the insurrectionists.
Josh Hawley was infamous for putting his fist up in the air as he walked by the protesters going into the Capitol on January 6th. And he is really a zealot, and he believes that we should be a Christian nation. Here's a quote from when he was an attorney general in Missouri using his office to promote religion.
That is our charge, to take the lordship of Christ into the public realm and to seek the obedience of the nations, of our nation, to influence our society, to transform our society, to reflect the gospel truth and the lordship of Jesus Christ. That is our charge. It has not changed in 200 years since this country was founded. It does not change with the passing whims and fads of the age. That is our solemn charge.
That's a Christian nationalist charge, that our country is under the Lord Jesus Christ.
And he's in Congress representing we the people.
And the eight senators voted not to certify. And I do have to say, to be fair, that there are senators who I think have Christian nationalist views who did the right thing, who did vote yes. But of those who voted no, they include Ted Cruz. Of course, you know his ultra-conservative views. We document them. Josh Hawley, we just heard from, and he's probably among the most vociferous. Cindy Hyde Smith of Mississippi, also a lot of white supremacist issues there. Cynthia Loomis of Wyoming, Senator John Kennedy, Louisiana, Roger Marshall of Kansas, Rick Scott of Florida, used to be a governor, and we had a lot of tussles with him then.
And you have a whole lot of examples of
Tommy
quotes.
Tommy Tuberville of Alabama.
Quotes from these people.
Yeah, and some of them we cannot say on the radio. In fact, there's a shocking, you have to go to our website, absolutely shocking tweet by one of them that is unbelievable. And then we also just did a representative sampling. Obviously, we just didn't have time to do 138 profiles, but we sort of just almost arbitrarily, I looked them up and picked people. And the House is just full of Christian nationalists. For example, Robert Aderholt, who voted against certification, who's the son of a lay minister, is part of the secretive Christian nationalist group known as The Family that organizes the annual national prayer breakfast. We have many longtime members of the House, but I do want to talk about Mo Brooks. He is from Alabama, and he was at the Save America rally that President Trump was at just before the invasion of the Capitol. And when he was called on that, and this is a quote from the New York Times, he said, "I make no apology for doing my absolute best to inspire patriotic Americans to not give up our country and to fight back against anti-Christian socialists in the 2022 and 2024 elections. I encourage every citizen to watch my entire rally speech and decide for themselves what kind of America they want, one based on freedom and liberty, or one based on godless dictatorial power." And we've also communicated with him in the past. And then, of course, one of the newest members of Congress that you'd want to read her bio is Marjorie Taylor Greene, whose pronouncements on religion, on race, on anti-Semitism, anti-Muslim are absolutely shocking. That's why many people are calling on her to resign, including now a few of her GOP colleagues. So there's a clear and present danger when we have public officials who pledge allegiance to their religion over the Constitution.
So you can read all these quotes and more on our website, fff.org/news.
And look for the news release from today. and right. and read all about it.
So we have to take a break. Here's a little bit of soothing music from Delius. Stay tuned for Mandisa Thomas. She's president of Black Nonbelievers, who tell us why she objects to the proposal for a national hymn.
And after that, we will speak with Carl Sagan's daughter, Sasha Sagan, about rituals for finding meaning in our unlikely world.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
The world is my country. To do good is my religion. This simple creed is all that we need to enjoy peace on earth.
Welcome back to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and that's my co-host Dan Barker singing The Thoughts of Thomas Paine.
Tomorrow is the anniversary of Thomas Paine's birthday. He was born January 29, 1737. Paine was a true American patriot. He was a deist, a non-Christian, whose book, The Age of Reason, was highly critical of the teachings of the Bible.
And the United States has a national anthem, but wouldn't that song, The World Is My Country, make a good global anthem?
Well, it would certainly be better than a national hymn.
And that brings us to our recent complaint that we have made to a member of the House who proposes to have a national hymn. And we have made a complaint with Mandisa Thomas, excuse me, of Black Nonbelievers. And we have Mandisa on the phone with us from Georgia. Welcome back to Free Thought Radio.
Hi, Annie, Laurie, and Dan. Thank you for having me once again.
Yeah, well, and first, congratulations on Black Nonbelievers' 10th anniversary.
Thank you so much. We are so honored to have 10 years under our belt now. And for anyone who missed the event, whether in person or online, you can check out the sessions on our YouTube channel.
Well, I was there for the whole two-day event. It was just amazing. Great speakers, Jeremiah Kamara and Christopher Cameron and all of them. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Yes. And so, Mandisa, you and the Black Nonbelievers and the Freedom From Religion Foundation have written a joint letter to House Majority Whip James Clyburn about his suggestion that Congress adopt a national hymn of the United States. Can you tell us why you oppose this?
Yes. So, I absolutely think that it is ridiculous for there to be a national hymn because, for one, much like FFRS stands for, we advocate for state church separation. And while the song that they chose, Lift Every Voice and Sing, is historical to the Black community and does, you know, it does speak to the struggles that Blacks have faced over the years, it does not represent the entire Black community. And it is also too presumptuous to propose a hymn that thinks that it represents not just all of Black Americans, but all Americans. It is offensive to the growing non-religious segment of this country. And we absolutely cannot just stand by and just let something like that happen.
So a lot of people don't know. I think it's a beautiful song. The melody, and it's very moving, and it's very emotional, and very appropriate, I think, in many contexts to sing that song. But the third verse of it talks about God, and He brought us, and He's our Lord, and it is very worshipful type of a hymn. So regardless of your views on racial equality, it excludes. It's another way to segregate Americans from each other, isn't it?
I would absolutely agree on that. And this also speaks to the challenges that many Black non-religious folks face especially when we have a black representative proposing something like this. Again, it presumes that the entire black community would absolutely endorse this, and it is extremely religious in nature. I remember having to recite that third verse, and it is extremely, like, it is extremely God-filled. And it would just be very, very uncomfortable and also offensive to have to recite something like that in a public sphere. It is absolutely inappropriate.
So today, one in four Americans now identifies as religiously unaffiliated, but at least 9% of Black Americans, according to Pew. This is growing. That's a lot of people to exclude by adopting a national hymn, even one that has such, you know, resonance on black equality. And Mendes, I wonder if you might want to briefly mention the importance of non-believers in the ranks of the civil rights movement.
Absolutely. And as we are approaching Black History Month, which does have its foundation in Dr. Carter G. Woodson, who was a free thinker, we must continue to remind folks and remind people that humanists, free thinkers, and atheists and non-believers have always been present within the black community and also, in fact, have made some very, very important contributions to American history. And it's important that their legacy, as well as the growing number of the non-religious coming from the black community, isn't ignored and also denied, because this would be sort of denying our existence, which is completely antithetical to the overall sentiment of Lift Every Voice and Sing, which, as we stated before, advocates for equality and speaks to the struggle and achievement. So it's important for us to continue to educate each other and be reminded of this history and the fact that we aren't going anywhere. In fact, we're growing, and also that we've always had allies. As we said in the letter, Dr. King it actually endorsed state church separation. So our communities have never been monolithic, and it's well past the time that our sentiments and our legislation today and everything today reflects that.
Well, we really appreciate working with you on this, Mendes Thomas, and congratulations again to Black Nonbelievers' 10th anniversary.
Thank you so much.
And let's hope Representative Clyburn withdraws that proposal to have a national hymn. Well, we're going to take another break. Stay tuned for Sasha Sagan. She's the daughter of Andrianne and Carl Sagan, who will tell us about rituals for finding meaning in our unlikely world. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylord.
We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. For those of us who are not religious, is there a place for ritual? How do atheists and agnostics deal with holidays and traditions? Our guest today has written a charming book about those questions.
Sasha Sagan has a degree in dramatic literature from NYU. She's worked as a TV producer, a filmmaker, an editor, and a speaker. Her writing has appeared in New York Magazine, Oh, the Oprah Magazine, Violet Book, and other places. Her first book is For Small Creatures Such as We, Rituals for Finding Meaning in Our Unlikely World.
And if Sasha Sagan's name sounds familiar to you, it is because she is the daughter of Carl Sagan and Andrianne. We have talked with Andrianne, the author and producer of the Cosmos series, a couple of times on the show, and now it's a real pleasure to speak with her daughter, Sasha, on the phone from Boston today. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
I really enjoyed your book, Sasha. It was just really rich with a lot of stories. But you, I can tell from reading the book, you have quite a heritage, and I understand the title of your book, For Small Creatures Such as We, comes from something that your parents wrote. Is that right?
Yes, that's true. Contact was the only work of fiction that my dad ever published. He and my mom together wrote many nonfiction books and essays and the television series Cosmos, but it was the only novel. And it comes from a line that actually my mom wrote in that book, which is, "For small creatures such as we, the vastness is bearable only through love." And that sort of is a good crystallization of our sort of family philosophy.
So do you think all human beings, do you think there's like an instinct or a ritual, whether you're religious or not, do human beings need to have ritual in our lives?
Well, I think it depends on the person, and some people may be very happy without it. But I think the reason so many of us are drawn to it, even if we don't, subscribe to any theology, is there's just so much change in life on Earth, the changing of the seasons, growing up, coming of age, births, deaths, marriages, all these events that are so hard to process and really wrap our minds around if we don't have a little formula for thinking about it and, a sense of what to do, to mourn a loss or to welcome a new baby or to celebrate that someone's reached adulthood. And I think that's part of what's so appealing about it is it's a way of wrapping our minds around all these changes that we all experience, no matter what we believe, where we live, what our situation is.
And you talk about rites of passage rituals, annual rituals, monthly, weekly rituals, and even daily rituals. In fact, you and your husband John do something that we do in our house, and that's morning coffee. Would you call that a ritual, bringing coffee to your spouse every morning?
Yeah, I do. I think there's a lot of things that we do that, if you could do it another way, but let's say, you and your partner, or you and your family always do some particular thing, a way that's special to you, that's meaningful to you, that sort of starts your day off on the right foot or, ends your evening in the right way, whatever it is. I think we can think of those things as rituals and it's, to appreciate them. And sure, coffee is like, a very necessary part of many people's mornings, but thinking about it as this sort of, quasi-magical thing that you have, these beans that grow in the earth and we percolate them and it's like a magic potion that wakes us up. And when my husband brings me a cup in the morning, I just feel like it's such a special thing if we take a moment to sort of look at it through that lens.
Well, coffee is my religion, actually.
You and I, Sasha, are very lucky to have such loving husbands.
Yes. It is. I do feel an enormous amount of appreciation throughout the day, not just when I get the coffee in the morning.
So when you were born, your father held you up. And you want to tell us what he said?
Yes. He said, "Welcome to the planet Earth."
And so I've heard of this, other people doing this. It's kind of like that's a ritual.
Yes. And, I think that's one of the things that is so common around the world in different cultures and traditions is to have something, something special to either say or do that marks a new baby being born. That's one of those things that just calls out for some kind of celebration, some kind of ritual, some kind of acknowledgement in this change, a person appeared. When my daughter was born, 3.5 years ago, we said the same thing to her there in the hospital room and tried to carry on that ritual another generation.
You talk about something that you and your mother called Blossom Day when you were a little girl. I think it's a very sweet story. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, it's one of those things that for those of us who are sorry, for those of us who are, you know, secular, the spring holidays, you know, we had sort of a secular, you know, we have some Jewish traditions that we carry on, but we had sort of a secular Passover, and, you know, there were some Easter egg decorating around and things like that, but there are so many holidays around the world that are tied to the spring equinox. And again, that's something that just naturally calls out for celebration. The days are getting longer, it's getting warmer. And my mother's version of that really peeled back the it peeled back the exterior or any facade or infrastructure that could have been religious to just the bare beauty of what springtime is. There was a dogwood tree that we could see from our dining room out our window. And every spring, as things would start to, you know, defrost, we would check it every day. And the day that it blossomed, she would throw a little tea party for me. And it was called Blossom Day. And I was a little girl, and I would get my dolls out, and we would have this little tea party and celebrate that spring was coming or had arrived, and that, you know, all this rebirth and renewal was so just the innate heart of so many of the celebrations that come at that time of year.
Because those trees look like they're dead, don't they, for so many months?
Yes.
Like
yes.
The forsythia.
Yes.
Well, for me, I have to go around my garden and check faithfully, devoutly, all of the bulbs that I've planted that come up. This, you know, this first the snowdrops, and then the crocus, and the glory of the snow, and then the big ones. So that is something to look forward to. So you also have a ritual story, I think, about your anniversary.
About the cab ride?
Is that right?
Oh, yes. It was just after my husband and I were married, and we were in Washington, D.C., and we got into a taxi to go to dinner, and we were sort of having one of those conversations you have a million times, and the driver was sort of eavesdropping and asked us, how long have you been married? And we said, 6 weeks. And he was like, oh, and he let out this like low vowel-y tone where we were like, here comes a whole bunch of unsolicited advice. But instead, to our everlasting astonishment, he broke into song. And just, we were astonished. And it was like a Janis Joplin medley and then some traditional songs that we had never heard before. And we were sort of like, are we in a dream? And he said, do you sing together? And we were like, no, we're not in a musical. What is happening? And he said, you have to sing together. It's really important. And he said, A, B, C, D. And we were like, very finally, like, E, F, G. And together with this stranger, we belted out the alphabet song together, and he said, you have to sing together at least once a week. It's really important. And let us out at the restaurant, and we were like, okay, we're going to do that. And that was like 7 years ago, and my husband and I have sung the alphabet song together every weekend ever since. When we, you know, before the pandemic, if we were apart for the weekend, we would sing it over the phone. You know, I mean, now we have a toddler, so it's much less weird. But for a while, it was just two people in their mid-30s singing the alphabet every week. And I think that, I mean, it was so funny because we just completely agreed to this covenant that this gentleman, you know, brought us into. But there's something about it, I think, that is really profound, because there's something about the silliness of it that is what works, because it brings down your, you know, self-consciousness, your defenses. And if you know, you do it, if you really commit to doing it every week, and listen, for different families, different things work, but something like that where you say, you know, even if you're grumpy, even if you're in a hurry, even if you have somewhere to be, we're going to take a minute to do this and just reconnect to what we value, which is our love and our relationship. And I think, you know, I've told this story since the book came out, and you know, I sort of thought it was a particularly peculiar thing, but the more people I talk to and the more people I meet, the more I realize that families have these kinds of things, and they're really beautiful. And I was pre-pandemic in San Francisco giving a talk, and a very dignified gentleman in the audience at the end raised his hand and said, yes, every evening before bed, my wife and my son and I howl at the moon. And I thought, okay, everybody's got some weird stuff like this, and it's worth celebrating and talking about.
So we are going to take a break. We are talking with Sasha Sagan about her book For Small Creatures Such as We, Rituals for Finding Meaning in Our Unlikely World. And when we come back, Sasha, first we want to reveal your acting job in The New Cosmos, which is very interesting. And we also want to talk about how, you know, secular Jewish, secular Christian backgrounds between your husband and yourself, how you're raising your daughter with holidays. And also touch on volunteerism and charity as rituals. Sounds good?
Wonderful. I can't wait.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back with Sasha Sagan and more Free Thought Radio.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at ffrf.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. We're continuing our conversation with Sasha Sagan, author of the book For Small Creatures Such as We, Rituals for Finding Meaning in Our Unlikely World. And in the book, Sasha writes, I can live without an afterlife. I can live without a God, but not without celebrations, not without community, not without ritual.
It's very, very lovely quote there. So, Sasha, I promised our listeners that we would tell them how what your acting job was in The Last Cosmos. It's really an interesting twist. Do you want to tell us more about that?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, it was really like something out of a dream. There was a scene, my mother writes and produces Cosmos, and there's a scene that showed my dad as a little boy. And in the background of that scene, someone was going to have to play his mother, my grandmother, for whom my middle name is for her. And she called me one day and she said, do you want to play your grandmother? And so a little, I mean, I don't have a line or anything. I'm just in the background, but I got to go to set and have my hair and makeup and costume done the way she would have had it in the 1940s. And we, you know, filmed it in this apartment that was like a replica of the apartment that my father grew up in Brooklyn. And it really felt like time travel. It felt like a dream. And so I'm in the background stirring some soup, but it really was a poignant and thrilling experience for me. I don't know if it would really qualify as acting, as I don't utter a single word, but it was magnificent as a personal experience.
But it was good casting, wasn't
it? Yeah. And what, you look a little bit like your grandmother, is that right, Rachel?
Yes, yes, and I'm often told that I have her laugh and, you know, all sorts of connections like that. And she died before I was born, so I never knew her. But I have my entire life, you know, little mannerisms and things that are carried on in the genes, I guess, I managed to get. And so it felt like it was, you know, if I'm going to get typecast as someone, it should be the person that. I'm carrying on her characteristics in some way.
So you have a moving story in your book For Small Creatures Such as We about the morning of your wedding. Speaking of your father.
When she disappeared, yeah.
when you're visiting his grave.
Yes, I. My father died when I was 14, and you know, so much of our rituals around a wedding. There's so much father-daughter stuff, the first dance, and you know, all these things that, like anybody who has lost a loved one, you know that even the really happy times have just a little tinge of sadness when there's someone who you wish was there who can't be there. So we tried to figure out in a subtle, secular way, the ways we could incorporate him, our memories of him into our wedding day. But the morning of my wedding, it was a beautiful day, and I woke up and I had all my girlfriends sleeping over at my mother's house to help me get ready. And before anyone else woke up, I snuck out. And I'm sure that my girlfriends thought that I was off to go see my husband secretly in the wedding day morning. But I actually went to the cemetery, and I just, you know, had this very cathartic experience at my father's grave, and just sort of let out all the emotion that I had that he wouldn't be there. And it was just, I was by myself. It was extremely helpful, because once I had that experience alone, I could go through the rest of the day and really just tap into the joy of the wonderful, thrilling, romantic experience of marrying my fantastic husband. But yeah, I write about that in the book, about, you know, it just seems like we have such a framework around weddings, and there's so many rituals and so many things we feel like we must do. But I think it's important to think about the things that we just need to do.
Well, you're not the only person who visits that grave, as you point out. You know, if I were there, I would go visit that grave as well. But you honored your dad in some very secular ways. You said that you wrapped an old necktie of his around your bouquet. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. And we had the wedding at an art museum, where there was this amazing installation by the artist Leo Villarreal that was inspired by my dad's work. And I know that's an extraordinary set of circumstances, but it was so lucky, and it just felt, I mean, it was in our hometown, and it just sort of all fit together beautifully in a way that was really, really poetic to me.
So you come from a secular Jewish background, and your husband John had a Christian background, and you have a daughter, Helena. How do you celebrate the holidays?
So we just do everything. I'm a big, you know, we do it all in a secular way. And, you know, the stuff that, you know, I love celebrations. I love parties. I love anything special. I love getting dressed up. And, you know, obviously this year, everything's been different, as it has for everyone. But we do a secular Hanukkah with my husband's family. We usually do Christmas morning, and we do something on the winter solstice. And on the winter solstice, you know, it's a fine line sometimes between honoring the science and, you know, trying not to be too woo-woo. But just the idea that, you know, we live in a cold place where it gets dark really early in the dead of winter. And the idea that because of the axial tilt of the earth, starting the next day, the days will start getting longer. It will get warmer. The light will return. And, you know, lighting candles and having a celebration and a special meal and just reveling in the idea that no matter what, we can have total confidence, faith, you might even say, that the astronomy of our solar system makes it a guarantee that the winter solstice will bring longer days. And I think that's sort of the core of all the celebrations that time of year.
Well, there's a theme that goes through your whole book, that all of these rituals and celebrations and observances ultimately go back to physics and biology. That's really what we're celebrating, isn't it? The natural world.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's just one layer that has to be peeled back before we can see that it really is the solstices and the equinoxes. You know, the phases of the moon have so often dictated our calendars and traditional religions. And biological changes, you know, birth, coming of age, death, are the natural processes of being human. And I think that we can look through all the celebrations, all the rituals, all the holidays around the world throughout time through that lens and find that really it's all about just being earthlings and what our experience here is and the changes that we have to face every day.
So, Sasha, in your book, For Small Creatures Such as We, you write that secular people disabuse the rest of the world of the correlation between godlessness and immorality by becoming more focused on charitable giving and volunteering. So what are you recommending?
Well, I think that, you know, if you don't believe that there is a grand safety net, if you don't think that the good guys are going to get their reward and the bad guys are going to get their comeuppance, then it's up to us to make a fairer world, a more just world. And whether that means, you know, volunteering at a soup kitchen or, you know, calling your representative or getting together to help a family who's in need in your community, whatever it is, I think that that's something that the impetus should be on those of us who don't believe to make the world closer to how we wish it were. And it solves the problem of community, where then you have a group of people where you can work on things together and make the world a little better together. And that solves some of the problems of secular life when you don't feel like you have a congregation.
Well, there's a lot more in your book that's very rich, but our listeners are just going to have to buy the book for themselves to read through it. The book is called For Small Creatures Such as We, Rituals for Finding Meaning in Our Unlikely World.
Yeah,
by
we didn't get to
Sasha Sagan.
We didn't get to talk about Passover. Very fascinating chapter, Confession and Atonement, where you say there is nothing more central to science than error correction. I love that take on confession. So, yes, we don't have time to get to all of it, but thank you so much for joining us today, Sasha Sagan.
And thank you all for listening. Thank you, Buzz, for engineering the show. Thank you to listeners in Ithaca in Watkins Glen, New York, to WRFI, in Philadelphia to WOOM, in Madison, Wisconsin, WIDE and WMUU, in Janesville, Wisconsin, WADR, KEOS in Central Texas, KOPN in Central Missouri, KEPW in Eugene, Oregon, KZSM in San Marcos, Texas, and WOOL Black Sheep Radio in Bellows Falls, Vermont, and New Hampshire. And, of course, greetings to all you thousands of podcast listeners. Find out more about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
Ask for more information at the Freedom From Religion Foundation's website, ffrf.org. Join us. And support not just our radio show, but our very important work to keep religion out of government and to educate the public about the views of non-believers in so many different ways. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope so.